I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we are back for episode 120 of Digital Divination.
Start over, back to episode one. You messed it up. We have to start all the way back from the beginning again. That's
right, because we're known for just critical, high professional values on everything that we do here.
Oh, we are. All right. Yeah, I was thinking, what episode is this again? Oh, yeah. We've been doing this 4.5 years. It's going on.
Yeah, 120, that's a lot.
Yes.
You know what I was thinking, though? I was realizing that I'm an employee of Wizards of the Coast, and my opinions I express here are mine and not theirs.
Oh, I was just thinking that as well, too. Yeah.
Just lay it out there.
All right. You know, our last couple episodes, we've been talking some about the Starfinder 2 playtest, and it seems to be receiving some traction. People seem to be interested in that. So
really?
I think we'll do it again today.
Well, that sounds great.
Let me ask, where are we at with the publication of Intrepid Scoundrels / Heroes?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Ron. Mm-hmm. As of 3 days ago, when this gets published, so as of tomorrow for us, the penultimate episode of Intrepid Scoundrels will be posted. And I think I got that right this time.
So now it's been months in real life since we played that, but I remember that everything kind of ratcheted up and up and up in those last several episodes. It's an exciting time.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And this one has a great cliffhanger at the end. So,
good. I can't remember it either.
I mean, it's been months.
Can't remember what happened.
Well, you know, we're on this big hut frigate.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. And at the end of this episode, since it's already come out and people can go, our resident Jedi faces his nemesis. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
And then cut to black.
Yeah.
Wow.
The Inquisitor.
Yes. So that's kind of cool. It's fun to go back and, you know, I listen to them again. It's like, oh yeah, that's what we were doing 3 months ago. So. But now we will talk about what we're doing now.
Yes.
Yes.
And what aren't we doing now? Oh, you mean the Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest must be what you're talking about.
Yes. That's what I'm talking about. And in particular, last episode, we kind of talked about some of the differences between Starfinder 1st Edition, Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest, got into some different classes that we've been playing. And I think we talked about that this time we would discuss differences in kind of the creatures, the monsters, mm-hmm. and maybe some of the GMing of that.
Sure. I mean, I'm happy to talk about that. But also, you know, before we begin, that, like, how do you all feel? I mean, not without getting any specifics, I don't want to spoil Intrepid Heroes, but how do you feel about facing off against these monsters? You know, I would say familiar monsters. You fought robots, maybe I almost said something you didn't actually fight. a wing, you know, something, some other creatures. I'm not going to say what it is because that would also be spoilers.
I mean, people. We fought people.
People, yes.
Yeah evil people.
Some evil people.
Yeah, I felt like, I'll jump in ahead of John here. I felt like it was like a good refresh with sort of a something familiar. But just kind of a real, you know, neat coat of paint on the top. I don't think the monsters are much different than Pathfinder 2nd Edition monsters. And in fact, when we had a particularly tricky fight, I won't spoil, as soon as we kind of figured out something happened to make the whole fight easier. I'm like, oh, now I know exactly what monster that is and what the thing is. Yeah. But I didn't realize it at the time because the fresh coat of paint on them.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's like, I kind of know what this thing is, but I don't know how it's going to interact with us, right? You know, how fighting it in this system is going to differ from before. So it's like just kind of coming into something almost brand new. And some of the things that we fought that I kind of thought we knew what they were, at least one in particular, was way harder. I thought we were going to have a TPK.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I want to know exactly what that is after we stop recording. Okay. But that does hit on like a huge thing, because how the monsters are you know, that you might know from Starfinder First Edition are familiar, but different enough because you don't know how they're going to like use that three action economy. That's the sort of thing that basically the big thing that I've been sort of noticing is that, like, I remember in First Edition, you'd peg something as a, you know, basically like a full action, right? And when a monster did that, that had to be big enough to take up its own turn, but it didn't always meet that threshold. And sometimes it would always be a big thing that would end up not really doing a whole lot of much and being kind of disappointing. And, oh, that's the turn. The monster's kind of gone. Not much has happened. And, well, now I get beat up a bunch. But in the second edition playtest stuff, I think a lot of the stuff like that might do that has been maybe ratcheted down to like a two action, like a spell, right? And, you know, that sort of action. But you still get to do like one thing. Oh, this didn't work. I can get out of the way. I can move. Or this didn't work. Maybe this is time to do just a straight attack and just put some damage on the board, right? So I think that is, you know, this the fusion of the action economy into what familiar monsters, I mean, if you play the first edition, do and kind of making them not as familiar in a lot of ways, like you were saying,
right?
Like you just sort of like, what, how is this going to come across? I know this thing might be able to shoot me with a big laser, but is that going to be a weapon attack? Is that going to be a saving throw I'm going to have to make? That kind of stuff, you know? And how many actions is it going to take, right?
Right. Well, and that's one of the classic pieces of Pathfinder Second Edition monster scaling is how many actions something takes to do. As a typical example that players may see a lot is that low level monsters that grab you, they attack you, and then they have to take an action to then grab you. And if it turns out they hit you with their third action, too bad, they can't grab you. But at higher level, monsters get the improved grab where they do it as a free action, right? So they get to play with the action economy sort of as they get tougher. That's just one of many, many examples of how monster design kind of plays with the action economy in Pathfinder Second Edition. So I'm excited to see that even in some of this very low level stuff we're going up against in Starfinder Second Edition playtest.
Indeed. Do you want to like get into some something specific here? Because I've got, you know, second contact here. So not necessarily spoilers for the adventure. So we can talk about some specific creatures that you might all know and enjoy, but don't know what they might be up to. And we can sort of go over them. So what's your favorite monster that happens to be in second contact?
Can I ask an overall question instead?
Yeah.
This is very hyper-specific, but you can see why, maybe you can see why I'm getting at it. One of the big innovations from Pathfinder to First Edition to Pathfinder Second Edition is not everything can take reactive strikes. Attacks of opportunity, now reactive strikes. Yeah. Not everything can do in Pathfinder Second Edition. They can do that. It's something that's kind of special for fighters at first level, and other classes can get it at higher levels. But it's also really special for monsters, and not a lot of monsters can do it. The fightery type monsters can do. Giants, for example. Yeah. They can do that. Do in a game like Starfinder Second Edition, where there's a lot more sort of laser gun fighting and everything sort of presumed at a distance, I would guess that reactive strike on monsters is a lot more rare because it's just less valuable. Have you seen any monster with reactive strike in Starfinder Second Edition?
That's a good question. Not off the top of my head. We get some other reactions, some sort of, custom reactions that monsters can have, which are always pretty interesting. I'm just doing a quick glance at what's over here. Ambush. I don't think anyone's in second contact. No, there we go. Boom. Oh, okay. The Crest Eater. Right?
Classic melee monster.
Melee monster. It's going to try to chomp you. It's going to try to eat your bones. So it has reactive strike. Pretty simple. It doesn't have, but even though it is a sort of classic melee monster, it does have that sort of range attack, that natural range attack that some monsters do. And it's going to, you know, be important to have that every once in a while. Not all monsters, I think, should necessarily have a ranged attack, even in Starfinder. But they might have a way to like get up on you faster or do something else that sort of at a range. But the sort of natural range attack, you know, sometimes if it makes sense, it makes sense. But if it sometimes it doesn't make sense and you just don't use one.
you know, speaking from my day job, one thing I've seen more and more often that Dungeons & Dragons uses is monsters that have an ability that they can use. It's only one attack line, but it's usable at melee or at ranged. You know, here's a arcane burst, right? It's an arcane burst right next to me with my hand, or I, you know, hurl the arcane bursty thing, you know, 60 feet away, 120 feet away, whatever. Yeah. That seems really efficient to me, and it also keeps kind of the flavor of the monster. I see what you're saying about how maybe not all monsters, especially melee monsters, need a ranged attack. But I think that kind of a good, flavorful attack can really go a long way in melee or range.
That's true. You know, I think for the second edition stuff, that there needs to be some call out, some different. It will take up two lines because you have to know whether or not it's a melee attack or a ranged attack.
Oh, that's the very first word still, right? Even in Starfinder second edition.
Yeah. For the purposes of reactive strike, right? If you're making a ranged attack in melee, right, and someone has reactive strike, they can ding you on it, right? But you can have. I mean, it's weird. Like daggers are kind of melee and ranged strikes, right? You can have a dagger, stab someone with it, throw it, chuck it, you know, 20 feet or whatever. But the expression of that needs to be, you know, show a little different. So you know what the range is on the ranged attack, and maybe it does a little different damage, a little less damage because it's being thrown instead of just being stabbed into you. But that's a good point. I mean, you can do things that are similar for sure, things that sort of make sort of thematic sense to be together, be like, oh, this is a melee and this is also how it ranges at you. Maybe it's, you know, it can just a robot, say a giant robot, piloted by somebody who can punch with that fist but also shoot that fist like a rocket.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah,
right. Whether or not you sort of have a thing where it comes back to you, you can only shoot it twice or whatever, you know, I don't know.
We're not. And that giant robot fist that it shoots at you could also have grab. That'd be kind of cool, right?
Ooh, grabs you and pulls. Is it a thing where it gets you, grabs you and pulls you back? Or is it just sort of just grab you and now you're just immobilized in place?
I want it to pull you back with a big old rusty chain that connects the socket arm to the fist.
This is mechanics that kind of, you know, are a little extant. They already exist. You have the tongue grab from a giant frog. Boop, it hits you. It doesn't do any damage, but it grabs you. Boom, right? This is the interesting part. I was looking at this stuff the other day for reasons. But if you go into Monster Core for Pathfinder Second Edition, obviously, you know, we've changed things so that when the grab goes off, the monster still needs to make the athletics check or attempt the athletics.
Right, they now have to make a check for it instead
The giant frog's tongue grab ability is listed as a ranged attack. It has a bonus, right? And it doesn't do damage. The damage is listed as tongue grab. Tongue grab is when it hits you with a tongue, you are grabbed. Does not have to make a check. No, but I guess because you're not doing damage, why have to hit and then have to roll an athletics check just to grab if you're not doing damage in between, right? Normally the melee attack is for doing damage and then you're doing that extra bonus. This is just to grab you. And it's probably also kosher because the tongue grab doesn't immobilize you. It just keeps you within 15 feet of the frog.
Oh, so you don't get the condition that you don't have to worry about all the things that being grappled does for you.
I think you get the grab condition. It's a kind of a special bespoke grab condition that just means you're not immobilized. You're still off guard, you're not off guard when you're grabbed. I don't think. But anyway, some of the other stuff still applies. For language of other bits of getting out of it still apply, so you're still
going to make an escape check instead of having the escape action.
It's just sort of grabbed minus immobilized, and then you can get out of it, or in this case there's some extra, you can cut the tongue and whatnot, but then I think the giant frog also has pull you in, you know, rich, you know, pull you in with the tongue to get it closer to you so it can actually get you in range of its bites. So that's sort of an interesting thing. So you could do that. They have said like you could do that with a giant robot fist on a rusty chain. Just be like, it doesn't hit you. It doesn't punch you first. It could just grab you, and then the monster takes another two actions to pull you. Maybe that's an athletics check, right, to see if it can pull you any closer because it is still affecting your movement in some way.
That would be really cool. I'm going to go ahead and assume, because you won't talk about why you were looking up the frog. I'm going to assume that Swamp Core is going to be the next big hardcover Pathfinder book, and you're doing that because you're going to do for Starfinder Second Edition a Dagobah book based on an agreement with Disney for the Star Wars rights. You heard it here first, kids.
That is a long walk, Ron, to get to that completely specious place.
Well, in Intrepid Scoundrels, we did encounter an Uga. Was that?
We did. Yeah, one of those creatures on Dagobah.
My brain was like, Mabogo. No, that is a Pathfinder 2E giant frog. This is an Ogdobogdo, which is Ogdobogdo. A Star Wars giant frog. Kind of situation. Yeah. I love the Ogdobogdo. I don't know why. I really only encountered the Ogdobogdo in a Star Wars video game, the Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. And I was like, oh, these guys are great. I don't know if they're anywhere else, to be perfectly honest. But if they're not, then it's a great addition to the canon. But if they are, great pull. I was like, we got to have a fight against one of these guys.
And we done. So that's it did happen. And it did happen in the past, right? That's a
yes, in the past. Not a spoiler.
We can spoil that, exactly, because it's been that episode is has long come out.
Yes, yes. Well, you were mentioning creatures from Second Contact we like. So I happened to find that I have it. So the PDF.
Wait. Congratulations.
So anyway, so one of my favorites from this, and it's because I was GMing a scenario where this creature came out in Starfinder and it got to do lots of cool things, is the glass serpent.
Oh, the glass serpent.
Oh,
classic.
I groan when I hear it. My one contact as a player with the glass serpent was a very memorable one.
Yes. But one of the neat things about this, and got me thinking about Starfinder Second Edition monsters, Pathfinder monsters, is reactive triggers. Kind of various reactions that they can have that are triggered by different things that they can do, which seems to be a lot different than what we had in Starfinder. First edition.
Oh, yeah. You can add that stuff because you can have custom reactions in Starfinder First Edition, right? You could always be like, it does, as a reaction when this happens, blah, 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 right? You could do that. It didn't happen a lot.
Right.
It didn't really happen a lot, honestly. There's another fun thing about, the second edition chassis is that you can make these reactions and they can be to kind of anything.
Very specific.
For any reason. Yeah.
It's a Columbo design. I think I referred to it sort of where it's like, oh, somebody's going to do a thing. Oh, just one more thing, right? you cast a spell, huh? Looks like I got a reaction. That's like when somebody within 60 feet casts a spell. Yeah, I'm just going to counteract that real quick. And then draw some of the magical energy in order to heal myself. So
yep.
Well, that's terrible. That's terrible. Well, I'm going to try to heal my friend. Oh, just one more thing. Casting a healing spell.
That's good. One of the things you want to do, beware of, is not have too many very different reactions, right? But, maybe even one. You could throw a second one in there if it's completely different. Like, there could be one for, starting the fight and one sort of in the middle of the fight or the end of the fight, right? Something we talk about the glass serpent, John. That reaction it has is a starting the fight reaction, pretty much,
because
it is called ambush, and it's just if someone walks past the creature, a glass serpent that they can't see because it's always invisible, pretty much, and then it just goes, "Hey, I'm here!" Bop, jump, bite you.
Which brings to mind another question that I really don't know the answer to. Do creatures and PCs get reactions before they act in second edition?
It's a question, right?
Yes, it is a question.
It is. That's actually a place upon which it turns out that Jason and I disagree. Not because the rules are unclear, but because the rules can be interpreted in a way that is kind to the players or a rule that is cruel to the players. And I choose to be cruel to my players. They don't even know the kindness option is a thing at my tables because the way that I run it is on your first turn in combat, is when you get three actions plus a reaction. If something happens that might trigger one of your reactions before you'd had a chance to go, before you got in your first turn in combat, you simply don't have a reaction. You just can't take one.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, that, and there's basically, the rule is that, I think, I'm going to read it again, I was just checking, but it is sort of like, your GM may allow you to take a reaction before, but Ron is saying what is true. That is always true. You don't have a reaction unless the GM says you have one. Okay. Or unless something else, you have another sort of, you know, thing in your kit.
But here's where Jason's coming from. If I can assume here, it's, well, players like using their cool reactions, and that's lots of fun. I like having my players have fun so they can have their reaction ahead of time when it's going to do something kind of cool.
Indeed.
That's how I've seen you
run.
And
as long as it makes sense to it, like if you are completely unprepared for a fight, like I probably won't. I'll say, hey, wait, you haven't got your reaction yet. So, you know, if you get ambushed, for instance, or something like that. But if you're walking around a dungeon or whatever, you know, a creepy old space station, you might be on edge. Right, you might be ready for that fight. We're going to open this door now. What's behind this door? I think everybody's ready. It's the thing that some this is completely off tangent, by the way. I feel like some GMs have a little bit of problem with when they transfer over from a first edition to a second edition is this idea of having a surprise round, which doesn't exist in second edition. Right, it is not a thing, and people are just sort of like, well, you know, everyone's going to roll initiative, and then my monster's going to get three actions right away. Like, but no, because that's not quite fair anymore. You need the initiative. It tells the fight of who gets to go first, unless there's some other thing that you can do that is like maybe a reaction before the fight has begun. Right, you need to know when that initiative is rolled. That's when the fight is happening.
Right, and that brings up my question about the glass serpent then.
Mm-hmm.
Ambush is triggered by a creature passing within 20 feet. So is that pre-initiative then?
It could be, I think. But it could happen in the middle of the fight too if someone is completely not, you know, this thing is invisible. How do you know where it is? And if you don't know where it is and you're just walking around,
in fact, a particularly cunning foe might be like, you know, pop up, ha ha, your PCs can't get me. Pew, pew, shoot with my laser guns. And somebody's like, I'll go rushing at him. Turns out there's a glass serpent lurking in between, you know, his pet glass serpent. It's got a little collar on it that says Daisy or something. I don't know. And it jumps out with its reaction.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Okay, so if you look at the invisibility of the glass serpent, it does say that when a glass serpent takes a hostile action of any kind, it is hidden instead of undetected. That means it is detected. Hidden doesn't mean because undetected is undetected, right? So it's going to be difficult to pull an ambush off in the middle of a fight.
Right.
Unless the fight has already started with somebody else doing all the fight, and there's more people in the fight. But with a fight against a single glass serpent, that ambush is really only going to be any good before, kind of as a sort of a starter, right?
Right.
I mean, if you look at every hazard that exists in second edition rules right now has a reaction that says, for the most part, something, they walk in and they step on the plate. This does this, and then the trap rolls for initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it hasn't even rolled for initiative yet, and it has a reaction. So I think, you know, we're in that sort of ground that like a reaction can be pre-fight, as long as that is as most as a surprise round as you can get.
Right, right. Okay, cool. That's what I was wondering.
That's putting a lot of reactions before a turn in combat. I hope that you're making a good argument, and I hope none of my Strength of Thousands players are listening.
Again, rules. I mean, there's sort of a thing. Like, Ron, if you're going to be that strict, you have to make sure that, like, no monster uses any reaction that basically starts a fight. Like, someone's got to start the fight, right? Yep. You can technically have, I mean, you can do other actions outside of a fight, right? I mean, treat wounds takes 10 minutes, but treat poison takes one action. But you can do it outside of fight. So you have actions outside of fighting, technically.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. So it's always like sort of it's real gamey because when does the game part start is always sort of a fuzzy line, you know?
All right, cool.
Cool. Right. I think, let me just kind of like, I don't remember exactly how the glass serpent acts in first edition anymore, because it's been forever.
What level is the glass serpent in second edition?
It's still level 5. Most of the level stuff seems to be the same.
It matches with the old CRs.
It sort of matches with the old CRs. I mean, that's sort of the case with a lot of second edition stuff too, for the most part. You know, there's going to be maybe something more, something that doesn't quite, but for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes, I think because when I ran it was in book 3 of the Dawn of Flame Adventure Path, so that would make sense, right?
Mm. Kind of early on. And that's specifically too, that I think that one is a little juiced up. Maybe.
It seemed pretty juicy, yeah.
Yeah.
That was good.
Oh, well, I'll say.
Because book 3 would be 5th level. Yeah, you want it to be a little, would be 5th level, yeah. But you want it to maybe be a little more than that, since you're already 5th level, you know, you don't want to have just a fight against one 5th level thing at 5th level. A little vanilla. Vanilla's good. I like vanilla. Something, you know, you want to spice it up every once in a while. Here's the thing that is interesting that the second edition Glass Serpent has that is kind of cool. When it hits you, it can kind of
constrict you.
Yeah. Well, it's not quite a constrict. It's called concealing coil. And it hits you with its tail. And literally, though, like it doesn't, it's not a grab or anything like that. But like anyone who it sort of wraps its around is basically concealed, because the natural invisibility of the glass serpent sort of affects the person that is just coiled around it. Yeah.
Like the predator, you know, the predator invisibility, right? That type of thing. You could actually, if the predator picks something up, it would become invisible because the predator's skin is wrapped around it.
Yeah, I think just, the tail just kind of, it doesn't quite wrap around, it just blocks view of it and you can't see your friend. Cool. And then like, oh, if I need to target my friend with a heal, oh no, he's concealed to you. You need to make that flat check. So, you know, fun, that's new and fun and totally on theme with what the monster is and what it does. It, of course, can still swallow you whole.
Yes, that's a fun part.
That's also a fun part. And swallow whole is always so difficult. Swallow whole, I've always felt in first edition, swallow whole was very difficult to kind of happen. but it's sort of can happen a little more in second edition stuff, I think. Cool. I've been finding that, you know, running these monsters, just sort of saying like, yeah, like I get to find out that sort of neat little thing that the monster can do that's new, or how the thing I know was cool about the monster, how it will work in the second edition. You've got some, I think, sort of, I can't quite remember. I'm going to say that I wrote the original Nihili for the original Alien Archive.
Oh, okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I just, the idea of
who's going to know? We can't correct you. Who's
someone
will know.
Someone, the person who did it, the person who actually did it could
say, how dare you? Well, it wasn't me, Jason. And I think I remember you having done it. I think you've talked before about how you designed the
I might have talked about it before that. Just sort of being like, oh, yeah, let's have an we have all these undead. Let's have a new undead that's about explosive decompression, because, you know,
right?
Why not?
And how terrible. Yeah, you've talked about it before, because you talk about how terrible a way to die that is, and how it's reasonable that would make like a very powerful, tormented type of undead.
It's in here in Second Contact. It's still also level 5, but still just lots of awfulness, lots of delicious awfulness in here, right? This has this is very similar to, I think, how the Basilisk or how the Medusa works. I can't really remember which one, but it's got a gaze, right? It's got a gaze attack that is a reaction that when you start your turn, I get to look at you, basically. And granted, that only can happen once per turn, but this is sort of like, I focus my gaze on you now. And you got to, you take your, all the air is kind of sucked out of your lungs, or you feel the pressure of the space kind of like, well, whatever is the opposite of the air, the lungs in your air expanding outward, because that's what happens when you're in space.
Still bad news. And then
still bad news. It's bad news. And then it has normal sort of decompressing gaze, which is, I'm pretty sure
as a single action. That's the kind of thing Medusa do, right? They have something that happens automatically as a reaction. It doesn't cost them one of their actions, but they can be particularly so they can kind of focus their gaze and have a one action attack with it to kind of really bring it home to somebody.
Yeah, this is interesting because this is also something I was happening to be looking at just coincidentally the other week, is that the basilisk and the Medusa kind of act a little bit differently. The Medusa has an aura. When you start your turn in the Medusa's aura, you have to make the save and you start to sort of turn to stone. And then Medusa has the one action where she can really focus in on. And if you already started to turn to stone from the aura, it fully turns you into stone.
Okay.
The basilisk has this reaction of, I look at you when your turn starts, and also I have a two action activity, which basically I fully look at you and I just stare at you, and that's the thing that really can really mess you up.
Huh. Yeah, so Medusas and basilisks confirmed in Swamp Core.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. Or something like them.
Yes, it seems like there was a creature that had a void gaze in Starfinder. What was that?
That is called the Veolisk.
Yeah,
Veolisk. Which is the Void Basilisk.
Yes,
From
yes.
Volume 3, Splintered Worlds, of the very first Witch Bath. Very much based on the fact of, let's put a basilisk in space and make its eyes and gaze, not turn you to stone, but like drive you crazy from the vastness of space. And that kind of is, I think it worked a lot in the way that the 1E basilisk worked, which is a little aura. I think those all may have worked the same. Basilisk and Medusa in first edition Russia, I think aura and then fully glance at you, something like that. Or there's one point where the basilisk was a biting one, where it would. No, that's the cockatrice.
That cockatrice is the one that has to bite.
The one
you
that
in
bites
order to
you
turn
to
you
turn
to stone.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Keep those mythical monsters separate.
Why?
Yeah, there was a whole void theme. The void basilisk, the void hag, void troll.
The void of space.
It came from space theme.
Indeed. I don't know if they're going to go forward on that naming convention, because now void is also a trait that does not have anything to do with space.
Oh, that's right. Void is the opposite of vitality, right?
Yeah, well, it's a negative energy damage situation. I know that, those things might also have void things, right? Like the Nihili does have void as a trait because it's also an undead, right? So it's probably doing some void damage to you and that kind of thing. If you want to go for you see it in here in second edition, is that the, I think the Asteray, has the cosmic trait. And the cosmic trait is it can live in space, basically, right? It's just basically it is aquatic, basically, right? For space.
Does the cosmic trait give it super fast space travel, or can it just float? Does it just have to float there without any other ability to go?
That's a good question.
Because I remember from the monsters in Starfinder first edition, that was always a little bit of a. Those were two separate abilities about whether or not you could have, and this is actually going all the way back to Pathfinder first edition, is whether they had sort of space flight as well as the ability to exist in a vacuum.
I don't think the cosmic trait gives you that automatically. It doesn't look like it gives you that automatically. It just, you can survive in space.
Okay.
Bam. They don't breathe. That's basically all they need to do.
Don't decompress.
They don't decompress, exactly.
Right.
The Asteray basically can match speeds with a starship, because that's kind of its deal, right? It's the starship siren, creature situation that sort of swims next to you and does something. So that's what it has a bespoke. So if you need to be able to travel through the drift or whatever, you need to have that bespoke ability. Well, something like it.
I have a question about a creature that we encountered, and I'm not going to talk about the creature, but more about the mechanic behind it, which was really challenging for us. So it seemed like this creature had hardness.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a new thing for creatures in second
not
edition?
No. In second edition, in like Pathfinder second edition and...
No, even creatures would have hardness even in Pathfinder first edition. 3.5. Yeah. I could probably pull out some second edition and first edition stuff where they have hardness.
Fair enough.
And it's predominantly for magically animated objects.
Yeah.
Right. So, but in Starfinder, I don't recall creatures that we went against have, I mean, objects would have hardness, but not creatures. Yeah.
it's in Pathfinder second edition creatures, some creatures do have hardness. Animated objects all have hardness.
Yeah. Right. But in the first edition stuff, it's not something that happened that often. You know, there's the fine line of like when you're talking about animated objects in a sci-fi setting, is it just a robot? You know, the robots didn't have hardness.
Right.
They just had some DR, maybe, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of an interesting line. It's more an object that has been animated, an object that would already have hardness being animated, right?
Okay.
Like there's a difference between a guy in armor doesn't have hardness, even though the armor would, if it was sitting there by itself, it would have hardness. But a animated suit of armor has hardness.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It's a fine line, and it's a sort of a fiddly distinction, but yeah, that should
be right. Because hardness is a lot more challenging to defeat than DR is.
Yeah. Which resistances are generally specific.
I know we're talking Starfinder second edition and even Starfinder first edition monsters here, but there are a lot of games in which that's exactly what armor does, is it gives you the hardness. Like Fantasy Age that's what armor does, is it gives you, it's basically got its hardness.
It prevents, it sort of stops all damage, right? Mm-hmm. That's what hardness does.
Yeah.
Most resistances are a little more specific, with the exception of the occasional just physical, right? Which is, but only that's only three, but fire goes through that, you know, cold goes through that, you know, and but often that physical is often get a little bit like physical, but maybe not adamantine, right?
Or
silver or something like that. So yeah, I mean, it is hard. That's why it's harder, because it's blocks everything.
Right. Anyway,
which is why shields have hardness, right? Because you want to be able to block pretty much everything for them. Though I don't know specifically if I can't quite remember if the shield block reaction says you are taking physical damage. So it might not help you. Shields having hardness might not help you.
Well, it might
can't
be just as
fire.
Limited as hardness is, yeah.
Yeah, but that I could see that being extra stuff you can put on. Put on your shield, you know, have a shield that has a little more, this you can use shield block with fire, or having a feat that says you can use shield block with fire, fire, cold, and electricity, you know, a suite of things. Yeah.
Cool.
Now I have to look up the shield block reaction, because I've said something that I should know, which is exactly how shield block works.
Okay, no shields in Swamp Core then. Otherwise, you'd know.
It's physical damage. That's why it sounded familiar to me. So physical damage only on shield block. But the shield itself has hardness, which does sort of block all damage if you could use it that way.
Yes.
And shield block is a fine reaction to circle back what we were talking about sooner or earlier in the episode, right? Being able to, if you've got your shield up, the shield block reaction is something that you may very well be justified in taking before your turn in combat, because you literally have already carried your shield high in order to get in the way of a thing kind of intentionally. Yeah.
Except for Ron Lundeen's Strength of Thousands game, when you won't allow that, right?
That's true. I would say you are somehow weirdly immobile with your shield stuck way up in the air.
But you can't do anything about it. In Second Contact, you've got a new swarm creature. The two like new things in this are two new swarm creatures, and one of them has a cool like shield arm, basically a big sort of like crab arm that uses as a shield that can use the shield block reaction and. So
far, is it, but it's not part of the creature, or is it? Does it hurt the creature to shield block?
Oh, if the shield is destroyed, the Bastorox takes a -2 circumstance penalty to attack rolls made with its battering arm strike.
Oh, I see. It's kind of off balance when its shield is destroyed.
But it can't hit you with it anymore, basically, because it's been destroyed, right? I mean, it can still hit you, but you take a -2.
There are like 900 different ways every swarm creature can kill you.
The other arm on this thing is a blade, of course, right?
Yeah, it looks like some funky crab. That's wild.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking. It's like a gross crab, a gross alien crab.
Yeah, it has 1, 2, 3, it has 6 legs. So, all right. Very cool. Yeah, so that's a couple months. What about in general GMing monsters in second edition playtests?
Yeah, you know, it's smooth. It's because it's the same chassis as the Pathfinder stuff. I think it all works like that, and it feels good. I only feel terrible when I roll terrible, for the most part, right? Or when I roll terribly on initiative and you beat the out of my creature before I can do anything cool. That's always before the first round ends. You know, that's tough. That's though a matter of like me being kind of sometimes bad at tactics and that kind of stuff. So,
well, yeah,
it happens
when you don't get to go. That's I'll tell you, and I'm going to talk about a different system now. That's one of the things that always would surprise me is legendary actions, right? In this other system.
Legendary
The D&D legendary actions. They go at the end of another creature's turn.
Yes.
They're like reactions then.
They're sort of like, in fact, they are very, very much like reactions where the trigger for them is always another creature ends its turn.
Yeah.
And then you can jump in, even though it hasn't been your turn, and you would get like multiple legendary actions per round sometimes, it seems like.
Yeah, it's helped with the action economy. I was actually talking to Mark, actually, John, our very good friend Mark, who is going to be running a Pathfinder First Edition adventure for a fairly large group. So, you know, 6-7 players, something like that. And he was asking for my advice about, well, what should I do? I know these are written for 4 players. And my advice to that, especially with Pathfinder Second Edition, and it's the same in, it would be the same in Starfinder Second Edition, right? They're already winning. The players are winning with the action economy. So don't make solo monsters tougher. That's not going to make them go anymore. You need a second type of monster on the field or some sort of trick to have your monster go multiple times to balance out the action economy between the two. Less of an issue with, or an easier issue with Pathfinder Second Edition or Starfinder Second Edition, because sometimes when I feel like I'm on the losing end of action economy with a solo monster against like 7 PCs, I'll just shrink the amount of actions that its existing things take, right? If it's got a 2 action, some sort of 2 action activity that's really cool, maybe that only takes a single action to do when I'm going up against a larger group, right? And then it can still move and then still make some ferocious melee attack or whatever. And then it's sort of very, very frightful. But that action economy, that's what legendary actions are sort of getting at. And that's what the manipulating actions, as we talked about earlier. Man, I'm good at bringing everything back to something earlier in this, this
episode. That's why we call you Full Circle Ron.
That's they don't call me that. Wait, call me that?
I might start. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of coming full circle, it looks like we've covered some ground here and some more Starfinder Second Edition playtest topics. You guys have some thoughts for our next episode?
Oh no.
We're gonna level before the next episode.
Yeah, that's true.
Ooh,
so we might want to talk about that.
Talk about leveling?
There are a lot of things you can talk about. We could talk about the mechanics of I am a first level Starfinder Second Edition playtest character, and now I am a second level Starfinder Second Edition playtest character. But we can also talk about sort of, you know, the power jump between first and second, how that feels a lot bigger than the power jump between like 7th and 8th or whatever. There's a lot of things we could talk about.
Except that we're not going to get to that before our next one, or will? Yeah, I guess we will.
I think we will.
Okay, I don't know if we're skipping one in there. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right. We could do that. I was thinking we could maybe down the road also get into items, kind of.
I was going to talk about that too. Oh, that's because true. I think, John, I think you're right. I don't think we're playing next week.
Maybe we won't have anything to talk about. I retract my suggestion.
Someone isn't available on the 22nd.
That's me. That's me and Stephanie.
I knew it.
It is. Yes. It's my fault.
Okay.
So not only am I the problem, I actually made a suggestion as though I weren't already a problem.
That's okay. Then we have 2 topics for the next 2 episodes.
All right. Excellent. Okay. Well, I'm glad we got that straightened out.
Me too.
I'm John.
And I'm Full Circle Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.